Hanging out at the pool is great. Relaxing and playing Vegas-style games on my phone at the same time. Drink in one hand and a blackjack in the other. It's all at SpinQuest. Over 1,000 games, including your favorite slots and table games. Be cool with this summer special. New players get $30 coin packs for 10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Treat Dad this Father's Day with great gifts from Menards. From levels, nailers, and drills to complete any project, to tool chests, recliners, and grills, we've got the perfect gifts to make this Father's Day one to remember. Stop by your local Menards today and save big money on gifts for Dad. Plus, check out our weekly flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark.
Chilling tales for dark nights.
Good evening, listener. You're listening to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights. On tonight's edition, we invite you to leave behind your safe reality and descend with us into the frightening depths of the most terrifying imaginations with an audio adaptation of frightening fiction about willing weapons. I'm your host, Paul J. McSorley, and tonight and every other Wednesday night, I'll be your guide as we traverse the dimly lit corridors of your darkest dreams. Joining us tonight to help bring to life the frightening fiction of Dirk Stevens is none other than your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley. Now, get your ticket ready, take your seat in our theater of the minds, and brace yourself. It's time to turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Our tale this evening is written by Dirk Stevens and performed by Paul J. McSorley. In it, we meet a man taunted by a vexing voice while on the job, and the precarious situations that occur as a result. Now, without further ado, I present to you, Meme.
Would you like fries with that?
I glance up from my phone just in time to see the man in front of me stuff his left hand into his back pocket.
No thanks.
For here or to go?
Man looks at his watch.
Here.
I go back to my phone, to the news report. A small mountain town shaken by a brutal murder. The pastor at the local Baptist church, a good man with a good family, well loved by his community. I sniff out a laugh. Despite his insufferable pronunciation, Colorado. Then again, it's entirely possible I was the only one who heard it.
That'll be $8.50. Would you like to round up for charity?
Not today, thanks.
I skip down to the part where the police arrested a suspect, some 17-year-old kid the pastor was counseling. It doesn't give much detail, only that evidence found at the scene tied him to the crime. I switch off my phone and drop it into my pocket. Of course there'd be evidence. The kid was at his house about 3 times a week for the past 6 months. The man at the counter pulls his card from the reader, tucks it into his wallet, and slips the wallet into his back pocket. His right back pocket. My eyelid twitches. I watch him take his receipt, fold it, and slide it into the pocket his wallet should have gone into. I don't get it. Why would anyone do that?
You know why.
I nod, hiding the motion by scratching my nose. I do, and I know what it means. What I have to do.
They're everywhere, Tom.
I know, hiding in plain sight, unnoticed, and it's up to me to stop them. I'm the only one who can. The only one who knows. The only one who sees. No, not the only one. We are legion, but secret. The man takes his cup from the cashier and walks over to the soda fountain. I don't watch him. I don't have to. I just have to keep track of him. Pattern him. Find the right moment. Providence will guide me, as she has so many times before, and protected me from harm that I may continue to do my work. Find those who walk among men but are not of Adam's seed, and send them back to hell. That is your task, the purpose for which you were chosen. I step up to the counter. Good morning. Smiling, I glance up at the board, order a strawberry shake, a large fry, and get it to go, leaving the bag behind. I don't look at him when I pass on my way to the door, only when I turn around to push it open with my back. But it's a momentary thing. A simple sweep of the room and I'm gone. As far as the car, anyway. I climb behind the wheel, drop my shake into one cup holder, jam my fries into the other, and adjust the mirror so I can keep an eye on the door. Then I stick the key in the ignition and turn it to accessory to crack the windows. The lot's too full for me to guess which car is his, so I'll just have to wait. Which reminds me. Arching up off the seat, I fish my phone out of my front pocket and shoot Frankie a text. Got a new lead. Her response comes almost as soon as I hit send. Anything, Coca-Cola? I pop a fry in my mouth. IDK. Just got an address. Probably just some old guy with a lot of junk. We don't need junk, LOL. Only treasures. Remember the list. I respond with a laugh emoji. Will do. And toss my phone in the seat beside me. But that's Frankie. She's a great manager. Hell, she's the reason our junk store turns a profit. Me? I'm just the guy with the panel van and nose for deals. The picker. I stuff a few more fries in my mouth and wash it down with a sip of frozen strawberry goodness, all the while keeping an eye on the door in my driver's side mirror. The shop's more of a side hustle anyway. Or at least it is now. Sort of a great way to stay on the road. On the hunt. It's good to know you still have your priorities straight. Please, as if you don't hear every thought I have. I suppose that's fair, but it's not about what I think. It's about you, keeping you sharp, focused. I snort out a laugh. The pastor makes 93 this year. I'm not even counting the people they may have corrupted, the ones the police pulled out of circulation, like that kid they charged with his murder. Ah, yes, you've done well. Yet be careful. Even in prison, their seed can spread. It's by my hand you've avoided suspicion, not your own prowess. Smirking, I take another sip of my shake. Not your counsel? Not counsel alone, Tom. You have no idea, the voice gasps. He comes. Follow him from ahead. Focused on the mirror, I slip my shake back into the cup holder and watch him climb into an off-gray SUV. The brake lights come on. I'll have to hurry to get in position. I back out, drive around the building, and wait for him at the exit using the opportunity to readjust my mirror. But the voice is right. Front is better at first. They never suspect they've been marked if I follow from in front. He takes his time pulling around, but traffic's light. I pull out onto the street with no trouble, and he follows suit only a few seconds later. Completely unaware, he's being watched. Stalked like a gazelle. Just the thought sends a ripple of goosebumps racing down my arms. This is what I love. What I live for. The hunt. Careful, Tom. If he notices, if you worry him, the game is up. No worries. I slow down to let him pass. This is a dance I know well, and I have all day. Two more cars glide by. I adjust my speed to keep pace, to keep him in sight. It's all about being in the moment, enjoying each step. The car in front of me slows. I pass and fall back in line. Whatever is required to keep him in view, to remain unnoticed. Foreplay. I'm four cars back when he turns onto a side street. I follow just in time to watch him pull into a parking lot. It's a brown brick building, black windows, some office complex, but no sign. I drive past to another lot a few buildings down, turn around and head back. There's another lot on the other side of the street, a shopping center. I pull in and park near the street, next to a shrub, but where I can get a decent view of his lot. Switching off the engine, I grab my phone and bring up the map. GPS pings me at 127 South Washington, which tells me exactly what I need to know. The address of the building across the street. I type it into Google and the name of the business, their homepage, scrolls up. Abercroft & Associates, a law firm. I open the homepage. A black and white image of a man being pulled out of a twisted wreck fills the screen, followed by their slogan, "If you've been injured in an automobile accident, come to the team with a proven record of success. Come to Abercroft & Associates." Below, it gives the office hours and a list of lawyers, complete with pictures and contact information for each one, including his. I have a name now. Robert J. Abercroft, trial lawyer. I snort out a laugh. He's an ambulance chaser. I switch over to GPS and scan the parking lot for his SUV. Sure, I could find out everything I need to know with a few taps on the screen, but I've already gone as far as I'm willing to go online. A cursory glance of his law office's homepage won't draw attention, but a specific search would. Not to mention suck the fun out of everything. I spot his ride over near the door and check the time. 1:30, hours before the office closes. Might even have time to head over and check out that pic I told Frankie about. "You're making assumptions. You don't know when he'll leave. You should stay here. Patience." "But I have other obligations too. Besides, even if he leaves while I'm gone, I know where he works. I'll just come back tomorrow." I punch the address for the pic into my phone. It comes up just under 3 miles away. Perfect. "You're taking too many risks." "Very well. I shall await your return. Do what I can to delay his departure until you arrive." Sounds like a plan. Slipping my phone into the cradle on the dash, I start the engine. This should be interesting. I haven't done a lawyer before. Pick. I roll up to a dilapidated, white two-story building in what looks like a forgotten corner of downtown. Cracked paint curls off the brickwork like a reptile shedding its skin. Brown paper hangs to the inside of what once were sprawling display windows. Just a few blocks off 18th Street Mall, less than 300 yards from the shops that replaced it. Like an old dog, no longer useful, waiting to die. I shake my head, jam the shifter into park, and switch off the engine. I got the address from a guy at the coffee shop yesterday. One of the regulars. The same group you'll find in every cafe all across America. Old men ready to share their life stories with anyone who happens by. Like the building, unseen by most. But not me. I love hearing their stories, perusing their secret treasure. I climb out of the van, make my way to the door, and knock. The glass rattles, loose in the old wooden frames. It echoes as a sort of grinding chime, funneled between the display windows and tiled floor. I step back to get a better look at the letters beneath my boots. Most of it's gone now, chipped away by time and neglect, but I can still make out most of the name. Marjorie Smiths. I take a deep breath. Drunk with longing. Who was she? How did her name play into the store? I doubt I'll ever know. The door rattles, pulling my eyes from the tile. A little old man in blue overalls wearing a dark filthy ball cap totters out. He tosses me a stink eye, then fishes a blue bandana out of his pocket. "You that kid Hank told me about?" He blows his nose in the bandana, folds it, and tucks it back in his pocket.
The one that wants to buy my junk?
That's me. But then I catch the Army logo on his cap, barely visible through the grime. Sir, I hand him the list Frankie made. All the things she's looking for. All the things that sell best. He takes the list, skims it, and his eyes narrow.
Well,
he shoves the paper back at me, takes a deep sigh, and his face falls.
May as well come in and have a look around. Ain't no one else gives a shit.
He turns and motions for me to follow. It takes a second for my eyes to adjust, just long enough to pull the door closed behind me. But when they do, it's like that scene from The Wizard of Oz when Dorothy steps out into Munchkin Land.
Ugh, I have had no luck lately. Wait, lady luck?
Bretsky, I got you. I've had so much luck on SpinQuest.com. They have all of my favorite games, slot games, live blackjack craps, and bubble craps. You can even get a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
10 bucks for 30? I'm headed over to SpinQuest.com right now.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
From monochrome to dazzling color, there are so many treasures, so many stories, bursting from every shelf, piled in every corner. A sea of treasure, parted only by the path between. And here I am following Moses, gaping at the whales swimming by on either side, following in awed silence as he leads me on past tricycles from the 50s, parking meters, stop signs, fenders from old Harleys. To where? I don't know. I don't care. How long have you been collecting? He tosses a glance at me over his shoulder, but his face has softened, warmed, I think, by the wonder in my voice, the smile I just can't hide.
All my life.
He waves his arm again.
Come on, I want to show you the good stuff.
The good stuff. I drag my finger across a taillight from an old Studebaker as I pass, breathing in the musty scent, reveling in the weight of time in the air, wondering if he has any idea of the value of the piles around me. How much I can load into the back of my van. Alice, lost in Wonderland. And on he hobbles.
Hank said you were looking for Coca-Cola?
I nod, remembering the promise I made Frankie. Signs, machines, pretty much anything. He grunts, then continues on in silence. We stop in front of a door along the back wall. He lays his hand on the knob, gives it a turn, and smiles.
Reckon you like this.
He pushes open the door and steps inside.
Take a look in here.
I poke my head in after him, and I'm instantly struck dumb. It's like a museum, hidden behind a dump. Everything's clean, everything's polished. Early Disney tin toys displayed in glass cases. Biplanes made out of old Coke and Pepsi cans hang from the ceiling as if frozen in time, caught in a dogfight. Old guitars, signed by greats like Johnny Cash, Jimi Hendrix, and others, dominate one whole wall. Treasures I could never afford. How? I spin in a circle, just trying to take it all in.
When? A gypsy's life would done it.
He laughs and my focus settles on him. Tingles shoot up my back. This is what I live for. Why I'm a picker. The stories.
Dad wanted me to go to college, take over the family business.
Pulling the bandana from his pocket, he shrugs.
But it weren't me, so I took off. Worked as a roadie for shows just starting out. Even did the Beatles once. Damned girls kept trying to sneak in. Made it impossible to get any work done. So I quit. Did a stint as a garbage man, a mechanic.
He coughs out a laugh.
Hell, bought every damn thing one time or another.
I can't stop smiling. Amazing. Simply amazing.
You knew Johnny Cash?
He flops down on a park bench beside a 6-foot-tall fiberglass polar bear drinking a Coke, buries his face in the bandana, and blows.
He's the one that gave me that guitar.
Beaming, I pull up a chair shaped like a hand and settle in to listen to his story. His epic tale. Strange and heartbreaking. Wondrous and at times difficult to believe. One of millions like it. Each unique. Each written a day at a time. And too many are left unheard. Discarded to oblivion by those too enthralled by their own tale to listen to another's. And it's not their loss alone. The authors need to be heard, to share, if only to know that their tale, their life, was not written in vain. And that's the gift I give. He speaks, I listen, and his face softens. He sits a little straighter, his eyes sparkle a little more. And when we finally come to the reason I'm here, the secondary reason, he cares little about the price we haggle over. That's just formality. All he wants is a good home for his memories, his story to live on, even if only in the trinkets I take with me. A good home, someone who appreciates them, what they represent. One tale leads to another, even as I load my van. He tells me how he ended up out west working the rodeo circuit, not as a cowboy, but a farrier. He pulls a small, rough-looking knife from behind his back and hands it to me.
Made these little beauties in my downtime. The fans snapped them up like crazy.
It's a strange knife. A single piece of steel, the blade, handle, and guard. A blade with a long tail curled around like a snake. Simple, crude, and somehow elegant. I've never seen anything like it.
Oh, they ain't nothing special, just bits of junk I found. Something to make a little extra cash.
He shakes a finger at the knife.
That one I did out of a bad trailer bearing.
I take in the hammer marks all down the sides. Nothing special, he says, but he remembers this one, even what he made it out of. Like I expect he does every knife he made. I catch him watching me out of the corner of my eye.
That's good steel, he grunts. Had to use old motor oil. Not sure I got the quench right, but it don't matter. Hell, I sold a ton of crap knives I banged out of worn-out horseshoes. All soft, all worthless. That one there is at least hard.
I flip the handle into my palm. It feels good. I touch the edge. It catches in the ridges of my fingerprint. Better than it looks, and razor sharp. I can't resist giving it a flip. The balance is a bit off, but still quick and agile. How much for this one? He waves his hand as if shooing away a fly.
Take it, I got more.
There's no sheath, so I toss the knife onto the passenger seat along with Frankie's list, thank him, and continue listening as I work. I leave with a full van, a new friend, and a promise to look him up the next time I pass this way. And as I lose sight of him in the mirror, tears sting my eyes. I wish I had more time to spend with him. But I'll be back. I keep my promises. Yes, you do. I glance up at my phone, clipped in its cradle on top of the dash. 4:30. I'm tight on time, but I haven't forgotten. I reach the intersection and head for the office building. For Abercroft and Associates. Robert Abercroft, I whisper. I wonder what story he would tell. He is a monster, clothed in human flesh. He has no tail. But even monsters have stories, don't they? How did he come to this world? What was his existence like before? What are their plans? How do they see us? As food? Slaves? I have so many questions. So curious, you've become so willful. Your penchant for tales has always been your greatest strength and weakness. When dealing with their kind, curiosity is dangerous. To hear Abercroft's tale, or anything he said, would be to risk becoming infected yourself. I nod, but not really sure I understand. Understanding is not required, only their destruction. That much I do understand. I pull into the lot across the street from Abercroft's office, switch off the engine, and pick up the knife. Still, I wish there was another way. I lick the back of my hand and shave the hair from my skin to make sure the knife is sharp. Ready. Spirits or not, their hosts' faces still haunt my dreams. So confused, so frightened. If they are creatures of thought, if they live in the mind, in belief, then maybe I don't have to kill the host. Maybe changing their way of thinking would be enough. Maybe different thoughts and attitudes would be poisonous to them. It is a certain way of thinking that makes the host susceptible. True. But once the mind is infected, it cannot be undone. The parasite fortifies its position, consuming the host's psyche, until all thoughts are bent to serve its purpose. But enough. Behold, your prey approaches. I glance up from the blade just in time to watch Abercroft open the back door of his SUV, toss his briefcase inside, and shut the door. Fortune favors you. Had you delayed a few minutes more, he would have slipped through your fingers. You should have obeyed. You should have waited. You're being dramatic. He's still here. I didn't miss him. Besides, it took hours. I would have drawn more suspicion sitting here. The voice doesn't answer, but I get the feeling it's not happy with me. I lay the knife back on the seat, start the engine, and pull out of the lot. The voice doesn't like it when I don't listen, but it'll be okay once I've dispatched Abercroft. We don't always see eye to eye, but in the end, it knows I'm reliable. You have been, until now. I reach the curb cut a few moments after Abercroft. He turns and I follow. Always a few cars back. Always careful not to be noticed. All the way out to this city's version of suburban dystopia, where he pulls into the driveway of some off-white McMansion, a carbon copy of every third house we've passed. His home, I suppose. I don't stop. I don't slow down. My van isn't too standout-ish, just a regular white Chevy. The same kind every electrician or painter drives. But I can't be too obvious either. And I don't have to be. I know where he lives now. I drive to the end of the block and follow the road as it curls back around behind his house. There's a wooden swing set in the backyard, the kind with a playhouse attached. A little girl slips down the slide. Damn it. One kid means there could be more, probably a woman too. That's another two set of eyes at least. Two more to kill. No, not this time. The evil hasn't reached them yet. I nod. Good. The last family I did was messy. I don't use guns. They're too loud, draw too much attention. And I don't use the same knife more than once. If I can, I pick one up as I go. The fillet knife I used that night, I found out in the detached garage in the dad's tackle box. A long thin blade with a wood handle. Deadly sharp, but not exceptionally tough. I knew I had to aim for the soft tissue. That's why I went for the kids' room first. I shake my head. That's when everything went wrong. Knocked over a lamp when I crawled in through his window. He woke up screaming. I cut his throat before the parents barged in. Even made it to the door before them. Got the dad as he came through. A single stab to the gut, just under the ribs and up to hit the diaphragm. I slashed down as I pulled out the blade to make sure the job was done. Even so, it took him a few seconds to fall. The mom ran. With the dad stumbling around in the doorway, she made it to the kitchen and picked up the phone before I got to her. She was already screaming at the dispatcher for help when I ripped the phone from the wall. Still screaming, she swiped at my face with her fingernails and caught my arm. Even managed to grab a cleaver off the counter. It was touch and go for a minute, but in the end, she joined the rest of her family. The real problem was that I knew the cops were on their way. She had my skin under her nails. So, using the cleaver, I took her hand. The next day, I read a news report warning people about an unidentified assailant who was taking trophies. A smile pulls at my lips. It's amazing the stories they come up with. But no, I threw her hand out the window an hour or so down the road, somewhere between Lawrence and Kansas City. That was years ago. It's probably buzzard poop by now, but it could have easily gone bad. I told you then, you should have started with the parents. Always take the biggest threat first. But you disobey, and things went poorly. Oh my heck. It's really angry this time. Look, I remember. I reached the corner and turned to circle the block. But this time, something's changed. I scan the houses as I pass, thumbs drumming on the edge of the steering wheel, but I can't put my finger on it. A teenage boy tips a trash can off its wheels at the end of a driveway. And that's when it hits me. The trash. I glance down the street at the garbage cans littering the sidewalks of the cul-de-sacs. That's it. Tomorrow must be trash day. I wheel into Abercroft's Loop just as the man himself trudges down the driveway, pulling a large black trash can behind him. My gaze flicks to the knife lying on the seat beside me, the neighbor's privacy fence, and my heart leaps in my chest. If I time this right, if I catch him off guard... Taking the knife, I tuck Frankie's list between it and my thumb, using the list to hide the blade. With that ready, I roll down the window and make a show of inspecting the houses as I creep toward Abercroft's. Carefully timing my approach so we reach the end of his driveway at the same time. To use my van as a shield against prying eyes. Abercroft looks up. I wave, slip the van into park and crack open the door, smiling. Hey, man. I slide off my seat, pause, and squint up at his house, pretending to check the paper in my hand as I step toward him. I'm sorry, I hate to bug you, but my phone's on the fritz, and these subdivisions... I give him what I hope looks like an exasperated shrug. Abercroft tips his can off its wheels and laughs. They take some getting used to, I know. Steps closer. What's the address? I take the paper in both hands and search for the address that isn't there. 1435. I pull it closer as if I'm having a hard time reading it. Well, you're in the right area.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love, with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Abercroft comes up beside me and leans over. I hand him Frankie's list. He takes it, and I plunge the knife into his stomach at the same time. He gasps, tries to turn away. I let him, twisting the edge of the knife as he moves so the sharp edge cuts clean across his belly. His shirt catches on the guard, moving with the knife as I open him. Blood seeps through the cloth like a rose opening to the sun. Intestines fall from under his shirt. He staggers back, unable to breathe, but alive. I pull the knife free of his gut. Pale, he moves to run, but he's too wounded, too shocked to move quickly. I grab the back of his head by the hair with my free hand and slice his throat, careful to keep away from the fountain that pulses from the wound. I push him toward the fence, grab Frankie's list, slip back into my van, and leave. It only takes a few minutes. A few more and I'm back on the main road. And I don't speed. I don't hurry the stop signs. I go along like nothing happened. When I'm back on the highway headed for home, I take inventory of the mess. Calm. At peace. My purpose fulfilled. The knife's blade is bloody, but not overly. I laid it on top of Frankie's list, so I don't think I'll have to wash the seat. We'll see. As for me, I stretch out my fingers as I grip the wheel. A few flecks of blood on the back of my hands, but it looks like I managed to avoid the mess almost entirely. And another monster meets its end. I knew it would be pleased. Taking a deep breath, I think about everything that happened. My new friend, the antiques rattling softly behind me in the back of the van, and the demon I left bleeding in the street. A sign along the edge of the road pulls me from my thoughts, a list of all the restaurants at the next exit. I don't pull off. It's too soon. But when I reach the next town, I think I'll treat myself to a hot fudge sundae. It's been a good day, and I think I've earned it. Detective Jeffrey O'Malley.
I don't know, Jeff. Kalen sighs. With one hand, he massages his eyelids, groans, then pulls his palm down his face, like he always does when he's had more than he can handle. This one doesn't feel right. I squint at the man waiting on the other side of the glass, study the way he sits, the expression on his face, how he does his hair, the way he dresses. And I have to admit, he's not what I expected. You sure you got the right man?
Callan stuffs his hands in his back pocket and shakes his head.
It was his van. The house across the way got it all on the doorbell cam. The Vic taking out the garbage, van pulls up, stops for about a minute, and when it leaves, he snorts. Oh, it was his van, all right. No doubt about it. But hell if I know he was driving it. Lifted his prints from the steering wheel, but forensics is still going at it.
I nod. You question him at all?
Not a lot. Talked to the business partner when we picked him up. Seemed like a nice girl. Genuinely shocked when I...
Kalen takes his eyes from the suspect for the first time since I entered the room to look at me.
He just seems like a really nice kid. I mean, I know what it looks like, but I searched the records up and down. He never had a run-in with Abercroft near as I can tell. Nothing in court. Nobody in common. Hell, I don't think they even knew the other existed. I thumbed through the file again. Tom Small, 28, half owner-operator of an antique store just outside Columbia, Missouri with Francine Frankie Williams. Frank and Tom's Monster Deals. Despite myself, I smile. Cute. Frankie had a DUI a few years back. 3 citations for drunk and disorderly from that same time period, but nothing recent. Tom has a few parking violations in the last year, but neither has a criminal history. They both graduated the same year from Columbia High. Tom with a 3.8 GPA, Frankie a 3.5. He was a member of the chess club. Neither of them went to college. Tom volunteers at the thrift store on weekends. He's active in his church. Damn, I snort. I ought to introduce him to my daughter. Callan turns his eyes on me. He doesn't speak. Doesn't have to. Already know what's eating him. Something's telling him this guy's the killer, but nothing adds up. His gut doesn't match the facts. And it's not just a tiny difference, but polar opposites. That's what's eating him. Callan groans, turns back to the suspect, and rubs his chin again. Yeah, that'd be great. Hey, Beth. Picked up this guy for murder. You should ask him out. I head for the door. Hey, you never know. Good girls love a bad boy. This guy ain't the perp. I don't believe it, no matter what Callan's gut says. But he may know more than he thinks. That might be what Callan's picking up on. I hope so. Might give me some idea where to look for who was driving that van. Come on. Let's go meet the neighbors. Tom looks up from his thumbnail as we enter the room. He lays his hand on his lap and offers me a tired-looking smile. I pull a chair out from under the table and sit down, directly across from Tom. Callan opts to stand, all set to play the hard nose if needs be. Digging in my pocket, I fish out a recorder and glance over at Tom. Before we get started, if you require legal counsel... Tom cuts me off with a wave. Nah, we're good. No secrets here. Good to know. I hit record and lay the stick down on the table. I know it's redundant. The whole exchange is being recorded on video.
But in my experience, just seeing the recorder, having it in front of them, seems to bring the interrogation home, make it more real, go smoother. If you change your mind at any time, just say you want a lawyer and it's over until they get here. Do you understand? Tom nods. I do. All right, then let's get started. I toss a smirk back at Callan and ask the question we always start with. Are you guilty? It's procedure, it's idiotic, and it's become something of a running joke between the two of us. If the suspect is innocent, the answer is no. And if they're guilty, the answer is still no. How a perp answers can be an aha moment, but even so, it just feels stupid having to ask. But ask I do. Did you kill Robert Abercroft? Callan rolls his eyes and mouths, yeah, right. But it's Tom's voice I hear. His perfectly calm, friendly voice utter a single simple word. A word that jerks my gaze from Callan. A word that nearly knocks me out of my chair. Yes. For a moment, I just sit there, staring at him. Then a smile tickles at the corner of my mouth. He's joking. He has to be. But Tom's not smiling. The pull of my lips goes slack. There's no sparkle in his eyes. Nothing. A cold void opens in the pit of my stomach. He's not joking. The realization drips through my mind like thick poison. I can't think. What? Tom folds his hands on top of the table and leans forward. Yes, I killed him. And a whole lot of others, too. I keep hoping he'll crack a smile. Blink. Anything. Some signal that he's joking. I know it shouldn't hit me like this. I know Ted Bundy and Jeffrey Dahmer didn't look like monsters either. But knowing isn't the same as sitting in a room with someone, seeing nothing in their eyes but kindness, friendly openness, and good humor. Everything. Every twitch of their eye. Every movement. And then hear them casually claim to be a mass murderer. It's beyond description. And I can't speak. It's Callan that finally breaks the spell. How many are we talking about? Tom's mouth jerks into a toothy grimace. God. He stares up at the ceiling and gnaws on his upper lip. 590. His gaze drops to me as if asking for help. 8? My face twitches. You're not sure? His lips curl into a shy smile. It's hard to keep track after a while. Out of the corner of my eye, I catch Callan rubbing his face. Why don't we focus on Bob Abercroft for now? He groans. How did you know Bob? I didn't. The echoes of my training claw their way through the shock clog of my mind, almost as if watching myself from above. I clear my throat. Then why did you kill him? Tom's gaze drops to his folded hands. He raises his fingers and lets them fall against the table. Because he was evil. I think back to everything I learned about Robert Abercroft, but aside from just being a lawyer, there was nothing evil about him. Nothing. But there has to be a reason. Road rage. He gave Tom the finger. Cut in line at the store. Something. What makes you say that? Tom meets my gaze. The signs. What signs? Callan asks. Tom shakes his head as if it's the most obvious thing in the world, as if he's talking to a couple of idiot kids. Things that don't quite fit. But I don't get it. What are you talking about? I'm not sure how to... He licks his lips, scratches the side of his nose, thinking. It has to do with quantum mechanics, consciousness, and the nature of the multiverse. Brow peaked into a question, Tom glances from me to Callan. You guys have any idea what I'm talking about? Callan takes a deep breath in through his nose. I know about the multiverse, that our universe is one of many. I turn, stare at him, and he shrugs. What? It's in every superhero movie out there.
like I have time for movies. Pinching the bridge of my nose, I turn my attention back to Tom and ask the question I know I'm going to regret. What does the multiverse have to do with Bob Abercraw? Tom raises his eyebrows. Not just the multiverse, quantum mechanics and consciousness too. Quantum? Shit. He sounds like a damn professor. Then I remember reading something about serial killers. The complexity, the intricate reasoning and patterns they employ. How it sometimes borders on genius. And that's what Tom is, a serial killer. The knowledge twists my gut, but it fits. Everything fits. God, this guy really is Ted Bundy. I need to get the psychiatrist in here. No, he said he killed 600 people. 600. A vein just over my right eye pulses. We're not that big of a department. I'm dealing with a major killer. Vicky's a good shrink, but she's not equipped to handle anything like this. This is huge. National headlines huge, which means the captain's going to call in the FBI. My temple throbs. The freaking feds. I need an aspirin, a really big one. I shake my head. Why me? I didn't ask for this. I could have been an actor back in the day. I don't want to get into law enforcement. That was Dad's idea. Keep up the family tradition. Told me there wasn't a future in theater, that I'd end up living under a bridge. I motioned for Tom to continue. God, I wish I had ended up under a bridge. Well? Tom tips his head and then flashes a smile. Such an innocent, disarming smile, it makes my skin crawl. You know Descartes? I think, therefore I am. It's like that in a way. Everything we see, everything we touch, everything we think we know about the world is based on thought, how our brain interprets what our senses pick up on. But cavefish don't have eyes. They don't have any idea what light is or color because they don't have the senses they need to even know it exists. That's kind of how it works with alternate universes. They exist in the same space, but not in a way we can perceive it. You with me so far? No. I nod anyway. In truth, I don't have a freaking clue what he's babbling on about. But Callan seems intrigued, and I don't want to be the only idiot in the room. Go on. Tom clears his throat, licks his lips, and leans even further forward, obviously excited. It makes sense these other dimensions would have beings living in them, right? I mean, ours is full of life. Why not theirs? And say those things figured out a way of entering ours, existing with us, just not quite in the way we think. He snorts out a laugh, drops his head and looks back up, laughing to himself. Actually, it's exactly in the way we think. This time, even Callan seems confused. What do you mean? Tom's laugh dies. His face takes on a serious expression. They are creatures of spirit. They have no body of their own, not in this universe or reality or whatever. The only way they can cross over is in our minds. Thoughts, beliefs, attitudes. Sort of like parasites of the soul. The people I killed used to be human. But their thoughts, their minds were infected. Like taken over by the parasites. Like one of those zombie fungi that infects and controls ants. And when they're infected, they don't act quite right. Little things the parasite hasn't got down. Take Abercroft. He didn't put his wallet back in the same pocket he took it out of. Or that pastor back in Leadville. He lived in Colorado his whole life and couldn't say the name right. Colorado. Tom shrugs. It's dough, not duh. Only outsiders say it that way. And he wasn't an outsider. Leadville? I blink, remembering the news story. You saying that wasn't that kid? You killed that pastor? Because he didn't pronounce a word right? Abercroft too? Because he didn't put his wallet in the right pocket? That's why you killed them? I can't believe what I'm hearing. Tom shakes his head,
sniffs out a laugh. You don't get it. It wasn't them anymore. That's why that pastor couldn't say Colorado. It was the parasite that couldn't say it, right? The thing inside him. Not him. I haven't killed a single person. They died as soon as those things got inside their minds. The human parts were just husks, hollowed out, hosts. It's the thing inside that needed to die before it infected others. Numb, I glance back at Callan. I'm not sure why. Support? To see if he's following any of this? Whatever the reason, the look on his face, the way he's got his bottom lip pulled between his teeth, the way his eyes dart side to side as if reading an invisible book sends chills down my spine. Callan? He seems to come back to himself, at least enough to meet my gaze. Still, I need to know where his head is at. What are you thinking? He doesn't answer, not even with a look. He simply stretches his shoulders and turns his attention to Tom. How do they infect others? These thought creatures from another dimension. Tom tips his head to the side. The same way any idea spreads, through talk. People get infected by listening. Ideas, stories, thoughts full of eggs laid by parasites ready to spawn. A smile breaks across his lips. Literal earworms. A shiver trembles up my back. I shake it away. This is insane. He's actually getting to me. I press my fingertips to my temples and try to clear my head. It doesn't matter what he believes. It's motivation, sure, but that's been established beyond any doubt. Insanity. What I need to know, what I really need to know, has nothing to do with any of this. Not now. Not anymore. I need to know who he killed. People like that pastor. Murders blamed on innocent people that fit the circumstances. Murders he committed, but for which was never even a blip on the radar. Dropping my hands to the table, I take a deep breath and take control of this madness. All right, Tom, we believe you, but we need to get some idea of how deep this invasion goes. Tell me about the others, the other hosts you kill. But he's already admitted to killing hundreds. Apparently all over the country. This isn't going to be just another late night. This is going to take days, weeks. Do you remember the first host you killed? Tom's brow peaks. Yeah, like it was an hour ago. I'm not sure how long we sat there, asking him questions, listening to him describe each murder he committed, in the same way people talk about the weather or the game last night, as if it was normal. I went to the store to get eggs. A guy came out with his shirt half untucked. So I tailed him to his house, took a knife from a drawer in his kitchen, and cut his throat while he slept. Can I get some coffee? But after 25 confessions, six of which were kids, one for riding a pink bike, another for kicking a soccer ball with his toe and not the side of his foot, how he cut them into tiny pieces and scattered them along the highway, all described in detail. All without the slightest hint of rage or remorse. Confessed through a friendly smile. Told with the same charming demeanor he wore when I first laid eyes on him. It's like watching a kitten eating a corpse, purring as it chews. Every word burns like acid, and I can't take it anymore. I push back from the table. That's enough for today. Clicking off the recorder, I slip it into the inside pocket of my jacket and force myself to my feet. I don't think I have to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Keep you here tonight. Try and verify your testimony and pick this up later. Tom nods. Okie dokie. Until tomorrow then? Callan tosses me a strange expression I can't quite describe, but somehow matches exactly how I feel. Numb. Flayed. Sick. Angry. All at the same time. There is no word. One more question. Callan grunts. Why? You didn't have to go into any of this. Why did you? Tom shrugs. I got caught. I mean, I might run into a few of the monsters in prison, but I'm pretty much out of the game. Someone needs to know what's going on. How many of those things are out there? someone who can take up the fight. Otherwise, we're all lost. I pat Callan's shoulder. He turns his head, his face still twisted into a confused, horrified mask. I nod at the door. Neither of us says a word. Not until the door closes behind us. Until we're back on the other side of the one-way glass where Vicky, the captain, and a few faces I haven't seen before are waiting, staring at Tom through the window. Callan steps in behind me and I close the door. Vicky shakes her head, offers us a tired, lopsided smile.
How are you holding up?
I shake my head. I don't know. This guy... She smooths an eyebrow with her pinky. Callan? He takes a deep breath, pulls his hand down his face, and nods. Yeah.
I gotta say, she sighs, I'm impressed. The level of professionalism I saw in there was nothing short of heroic.
She folds her arms over her chest and goes back to watching Tom.
He's dangerous, on a psychological level. I don't think it's safe for any one person to question him too long at a time. I recommend taking it in shifts.
The captain huffs out an almost unintelligible, "Ah, hell," groans and props his hands on his hips. Like we're gonna have a say in any of this anyhow. He squints at Callan, then me, and tugs at his ear. You two go home, get some sleep. I'll Frank and Donnelly do some digging. See if there's any truth to what this guy's saying. Hopefully he's full of shit. Either way, Abercroft's murder's already gone public. His law firm's loaded for bear. He stops, stares at everyone in the room in turn before adding, Dot your I's, people. The big boys will be here tomorrow. Let's see if we can't give them something they can use to fry this son of a bitch. Yes, sir, I mumble, barely remembering to hold the door for Callan as I leave the room. Still empty, head swimming. Callan bumps into me on the way through, mumbles, sorry, and stumbles down the hall, pinching his nose. All the way to the drinking fountain. He takes a drink, splashes a handful of water on his face, and shakes his head, arms braced against the sides of the bowl, his face pale, shoulders slumped. I slump after him, lean up against the wall beside the water fountain, and wait for a uniform to pass. You all right? It's a stupid question. I know exactly how he's feeling, and it's not even in the same zip code as all right. Takes deep breath, closes his eyes and shakes his head. I don't know. I just don't know. I know he's crazy. I know that. I know everything he said is just insane. But all that crap about thought parasites. He snort grumbles something I can't make out and his arms shake. I just can't get his voice out of my head. I lay my hand on his shoulder. You need to talk to Vicky. Lifts his head, peers at me with one eye. It's not weak. We just spent, I glance at my watch, 3 hours listening to Mr. Rogers talk about gutting people for holding their pen wrong. Smile and all. Hell, you'd be crazy if it didn't screw with you. His head falls again. I guess. He pushes up from the drinking fountain with a long groan. I think I just need a beer. Or six. I'm headed over to the Rusty Spur. You coming? I shake my head. The recorder taps against my chest, full of things I need to hear again, to go over, if only to settle the doubts in my own mind. Nah, the Godzilla marathon's on tonight. I've got a date with a recliner and a stack of nachos. Callan cracks a half smile. Each his own. See you tomorrow. Tosses me a finger wave, turns, and stumbles off down the hall. But as I watch him go, it occurs to me his wave is off. A roll of the fingers. Not his usual two-fingered chop. Enough to spark a single thought in the back of my mind. A new voice. Tom's voice. Something's changed about him. What if Tom wasn't crazy? What if he was right?
I hope you enjoyed Meme, as written by Dirk Stevens and performed by Paul J. McSorley. Dirk Stevens is a figment of your imagination, more at home wandering the dreams and fantasies of men than the mundane lands of the real. He serves as an intermediary only, writing the stories of those whose consciousness allow him entrance. On to the shows. Longtime resident Otis Jiry has his very own show here on our network, Scary Stories Told in the Dark, which you can hear every Sunday night. We also have Eric Peabody's Horror Hill, a podcast dedicated to some of our deeper and darker tales. We hope you check him out. And Drew Blood's Dark Tales airs Fridays, featuring some Southern down-home horror. And don't forget to check out the Fear from the Heartland archives, featuring more than 120 episodes. Well, friends, our weekly descent into the depths has just about come to a close. But before we go, I'd like to take a moment to thank you for joining us tonight and remind you to take a moment to stop by our iTunes page and leave Chilling Tales for Dark Nights a 5-star review and a kind word. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram if you haven't already. And of course, subscribe to us on YouTube, where you can find an archive of our work going back to 2012. And consider signing up as a patron at our website, chillingtalesfordarknights.com, to show your support and get all of our content ad-free. I'm your host of the evening, Paul J. McSorley, and it's been a pleasure. Tune in again next week when we once again turn off the lights and turn on the dark. Sweet dreams, listener. Sweet dreams.
Whether it's slots or live dealers, SpinQuest.com has the fun and action you're looking for. With SpinQuest exclusives, blackjack, roulette, baccarat, and even live dice with craps and bubble craps. The games never stop, so you don't have to. And right now, new users get $30 coin packs for just $10. Play now at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.